KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We are sponsored in part by Bosky Home Services. They provide heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 444-7200. That's 444-7200 is their phone number. Bosky Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. We want to thank Carlos and his team for all the support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Mature subject matter today, our friend Shelly Rapp. She is the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, and Sergeant Kyle Woods with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office. Both of you deal with a very, I don't know how to say any other thing except horrible topic of human trafficking. And it's shocking to me, as I've said to our listeners hundreds of times now, that this even exists in our good old Albuquerque, New Mexico. Kyle and Shelly, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Thank you so much for having us today, Jim. We really appreciate that.
Shelly, you've got on your website, I kind of played off a quote that you put by Margaret Wheatley. And what I want to ask you is, have New Mexico communities discovered what they care about? Because it's really going to take that they care about this before anything can be done.
I agree. It really is. And what we have to look at and realize with the topic of human trafficking, specifically the trafficking of minors, is that we as a community have to be willing to really care about our children at all levels. And that means we look at what's happening with the Children, Youth, and Families Department. We look at what's happening with marriages and families. So in looking at, does our community care about children, we have to understand that what we see is that the community says they care, but the actions aren't necessarily there. And that's an important thing for us to understand, that children are not necessarily safe in the state of New Mexico.
And you've said to us in past programs, I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, what kind of things need to happen at the legislative level? You've talked to us about bills, and we're going to cover all of that today on the show. Sergeant Woods, you're dealing with human trafficking, not just minors, but human trafficking of all kinds. And it's my understanding that people are trafficked in many ways. It's not just sex trafficking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, human trafficking is this very broad umbrella when you start to understand what all it covers. I will say that our department primarily focuses on sex trafficking, that of adults and of juveniles, commonly referred to as domestic minor sex trafficking. But the umbrella of human trafficking also includes the smuggling of persons. So, you know, bringing illegal persons in, undocumented persons. Our department has located a couple stash houses where we've kind of tripped upon, as it were, a number of persons who were brought into the United States illegally. They're now in kind of the middle of this transit towards their ultimate goal of getting in and becoming a part of the United States. But in the meantime, there's mistreatment occurring, so on and so forth. So we partner with our federal law enforcement agencies to try to address these as best as possible.
Is there any way that we as citizens can help law enforcement with these issues?
Being aware of the realities of what this looks like is, I think, the first goal. And that comes down to, you know, we'll see posts on social media about, you know, a mother being followed in a grocery store and being concerned that a human trafficker, they'll say, was following them to take their child from a grocery cart. Well, the reality is that's just not what it looks like. That's not what's happening. And I'm not trying to demean the fear and the concern that may have brought that story around, and there may have been other issues, but that's not what it looks like. So educating our community, understanding the realities of what it looks like, and then being willing to engage at various levels, and I'll echo what Shelly said, this is much broader than just a law enforcement issue. This starts with early childhood development. This starts, this has an impact when we speak about economics in New Mexico, poor care of children in our state and in any state is directly tied to economics. And so children who wind up in the system from impoverished families are the most likely to be trafficked. So maybe you're at a place where you own a business and you can employ more people, right? Well, you are actually benefiting the community and maybe engaging in a way that would keep another child off the street. So it's a very broad issue that can be addressed from a number of angles.
Shelley, let's talk just a little bit about the New Mexico Dream Center. I'm sorry, it kind of sounds redundant. I'm always asking you that, and you tell us that, you know, frequently what you do, but I think we need to be reminded.
Absolutely. So with the New Mexico Dream Center, we have two programs that provide services for folks. So our first one is called Spoken For, and Spoken For provides aftercare services for identified victims of human trafficking. And so aftercare looks like emergency shelter, transitional living, case management, and just really helping these identified survivors connect with services in our community. And so that's what we have right there. We also have something called The Harbor that's located off of East Central. And The Harbor is a drop-in center for young people who are experiencing homelessness. So for those young kids that are not housed, are very precariously housed, or they're couch surfing, essentially they can come to our facility Tuesday through Fridays and get food, take showers, do their laundry, get hygiene, get on the computer, and connect with a case manager. And the reason we started The Harbor is because we had had three clients in 2017 who had all been trafficked from the corner of Central and Wyoming, which is very close to where we are, and they had all been trafficked as homeless youth. And so they didn't have resources. They weren't connected to the services, which there are very few services for homeless young people in our city and in our state. And so they were really vulnerable, and they were approached by a trafficker. All three were underage. All three were approached by different traffickers and ended up in those kinds of situations. And so we wanted to provide a way for those vulnerable kids to connect with caring and safe adults and be able to have some resources instead of feeling like they have to rely on dangerous people for services.
Shelley, when we talk about the lack of services for minors, minor domestic sex trafficking, give us another overview of what services are not available. For example, a lot of times, at least I've always thought before talking with you about this, that if you were a homeless person and you wanted to go check into a homeless shelter, that there were enough beds available, they're not full, but that's not really available to minors, is it?
That's correct. You have to understand that when we're talking about a young person who is homeless, that they can't access services the same way that an adult can. They can't get food stamps for themselves. They can't check themselves into a hotel or a motel if they've even got the money to do something like that. We do have two youth shelters in Albuquerque that they can go to. One of the issues that we deal with is that it is policy in New Mexico that you have to have an adult and a guardian, or you have to be in the custody of the state to be able to stay at one of those shelters. And so again, that causes a problem when you don't have those kinds of resources and you end up not being able to do that. The other thing too is that kids that are homeless, and I'm sure Kyle can speak to this as well, so they're sketched out. They don't necessarily want to go to those shelters. They hide themselves very, very well, and so they are not trying to necessarily be found. So we have to look at a different solution to addressing this problem.
So a lot of times a child will not want to be identified because more than likely they're going to be sent back to their parents if they're a runaway.
They could be sent back to their parents. And let me just say something about being a runaway. If you're a runaway teen and you choose to stay runaway, things are not good at home, right? So, like, you know, I've had people say, well, you know, what if they're spoiled and they just don't want to listen to their mom and dad? And, like, I get that. I remember being sort of like that when I was in high school. But you only have to spend a night or two out on the streets in Albuquerque where you realize that home is a much better option than sleeping on the streets. Mm-hmm. Our streets are dangerous. And so, so the kid that is choosing to stay out is staying out for a reason, and we need to understand that. We need to be willing to look at the reality of that.
Sergeant Kyle Woods with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office is in studio, along with Shelley Rep. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. We have a very mature topic today. We're talking about minor domestic sex trafficking and human trafficking altogether. Shelley, you're going to, I want that disclaimer to go out, and Steve's kind of reminded me to do that a couple of times, because this is a tough subject. If you have kids at home, it may just be a little bit too intense of a subject. We're obviously going to be very cautious about the language we use and everything else, but this really is an awful thing. for people to be sex trafficked.
Well, it is. It is something that nobody would ever consider could happen into their family. Mm. And so I would say you want to be very aware if you've got kids hanging out with you at home. I know you guys offer this as a podcast as well that you can listen to at a later time. So if you've got little ones around and you're like, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. Then, you know, you feel free to listen to the show later. The other thing is Sergeant Woods and I are we're very cautious with our language. And so we're going to try to make sure that we are careful about what we do say because we don't want to cause problems. But I would say if this is an issue that you're concerned about or maybe like give a trigger warning that some of the things we could talk about could cause some anxiety in people.
I want to make sure that everybody knows about the first ever Vulnerable No More event coming up at Legacy Church on June 18th. Shelley is going to be a guest speaker there. Shelley, before we go on to some more intense topics here, I want to ask you what you're going to be speaking about at that event and maybe tell us who should go.
Sure. So the Vulnerable No More event is geared towards families who have children that are middle school and high school age. Essentially, what they're focusing on is bringing awareness around human trafficking and other topics, other subjects that can be kind of used in a situation with a young person to get them to do something they shouldn't do. So essentially, you have vulnerabilities, and those can be exploited. So I'm going to be starting off the evening, and I'm going to do what's called Human Trafficking 101. So a short overview of human trafficking and what that looks like, some of the kind of ways we see that traffickers will recruit and groom young people into the situation. So that's the topic that I've been given for the Vulnerable No More event.
And this plays off something that Sergeant Woods said a little bit earlier. He gave us a picture of how most people view children being trafficked, and they're not. That doesn't really happen that way. They're actually groomed and recruited, and it's a business. Can you kind of go through some of that for us, Kyle?
Yeah, that's why it's such a broad topic and needs to be addressed from so many angles. What we see traditionally and statistically, not just in New Mexico but across the United States, is that the children who are being trafficked are primarily those who are lacking services, who are disconnected from resources. That starts at the family level, right, the core structure. And then those who are engaged or involved with the state departments of child welfare in New Mexico, that's Children, Youth, and Family Department, they become highly, highly vulnerable the older they get. They hit 12 or 13. They do start running. Part of what our group does, it's known as the GHOST unit, is we work with at-risk repeat runaway youth. At that point in time, they are making a decision that it is better for me to try to do this on my own on the streets than to maybe deal with whatever it is at home within foster care. Maybe it's treatment foster care. A lot of our trafficked youth, in fact, I can say every single trafficked youth I've dealt with has been abused physically and or sexually as a youth. And this becomes almost a normalized environment for them, opening them up to be exploited. Just for the other side of the coin to understand, a lot of our traffickers come from this exact same environment. Some will turn to be perpetrators of this. Some will become victims of this. And so this is very different than what society likes to see. It is our youth walking on our streets, coming from our youth centers, coming from the shelters that should be in school but aren't. They're dropped out of school. No one's checking on them. So they're removed from the core structures we as a society have set up to try to make them this successful human being in our culture, and they become so vulnerable in that place. And so having something like the Harbor is so important. And that's not to take away from, you know, Amistad and New Day, these shelters that I can't sing the praises enough about for what they do for our youth, but we have to have more for them. These kids don't want to be reconnected. Many of them have been traumatized by the system that's trying to help them. Mm-hmm. They don't trust us as law enforcement often, ever, actually, certainly at first contact, they don't trust us. And many of the services that are set there to help them, they want nothing to do with, again, because of this lifetime of trauma. The reality is if a child were yanked out from under a bed, as maybe Hollywood would depict it, or out of a grocery cart, that elicits probably the largest law enforcement response that you are going to see. And it's going to be multi-agency, state and federal level. You get the Amber Alerts, and that draws a lot of attention. And so that's difficult for traffickers to want to have that type of attention.
Real quick question before we take a break. I need to ask you, why is it so difficult to put sex traffickers in jail? That's maybe a longer answer than
I was going to say. That might be more than we have.
It's a long answer.
Okay, why don't we do this? We'll come back and talk about that. We'll take a little break, say thank you to a couple of our sponsors. People are so gracious to support the ministry of KLYT and our show ABQ Connect. We'll be back with Sergeant Kyle Woods and Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center. Sergeant Woods is with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department working with the Ghost Unit. We'll be right back after these messages. In the spring, children's thoughts turn to creating wonderful summer memories. That's the case with your children and the children at Albuquerque Christian Children's Home. We care for children who have been abused, abandoned, and neglected. Help them have the summer every child dreams of having. Your donation of funds and gift cards to restaurants, ice cream shops, and sporting events will make that happen. We can also use gift cards from clothing stores to help us outfit our children for the summer. Call 898-5520 or online at acch4kids.org.
I'm Pastor Scott Tom, host of the Bible Answer program, No Other Doctrine. We have a college to train you for ministry. You can train at ccfcollege.com, but every 2 years, I personally train up 50 men. It is low cost and only one night a week. It starts in August. Men, get more info at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org or call 990-7588.
What do you do when you haven't got a prayer? Listen to this hotspot to find out.
Prayerlessness impoverishes us. I lose out on an opportunity to partner with God in the work He wants to do.
Skip Heitzig continues with this about the sin of prayerlessness.
Jesus said, you know this, ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall, tell me, find. Knock and the door shall be opened unto you.
Lock into a motherload of messages by Skip at connectwithskip.com.
Far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. What do you mean it robs others? Well, it robs people of the blessings God wants to give them, and that is the epitome of selfishness.
Finally, a strong call to action locks out this hotspot.
Prayer is action. It's the first action because we're engaging God in the process. You can always do more than pray after you've prayed, but you can never do more than pray until you pray.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 836-5700. That's 836-5700 or indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. In studio with New Mexico Dream Center Executive Director Shelley Rep and Sergeant Kyle Woods with the Ghost Unit of the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department, talking about not a fun subject, but I am encouraged when I talk to you both. Just met Sergeant Woods, but it sounds like there's some hope. There's a focus. And Sergeant, I just started to ask you, why are sex traffickers, one, hard to find, two, hard to arrest, and number three, hard to prosecute successfully?
And it's a big answer, but I will give kind of the basic trafficking. You know, here's the analogy I use. If I pull a car over and I find trafficking amounts of narcotics inside that vehicle, there's an intent there with the amount that's there that's presumed within the law, and I don't have to have the cooperation of that methamphetamine to go to court. When you're talking about a human being that's being trafficked, you really require some level of cooperation of that human being, and this goes back to the foundation I laid of the amount of trauma that these individuals face and the lack of trust in the services that are there to help them, and sometimes being victim of the services that are there, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And so the very first step that we face in overcoming to get a successful prosecution is that of gaining the trust and therefore cooperation of a victim that's been identified. And most often one of the first hurdles we have to overcome is that they are drug addicted. Mm-hmm. And that drug addiction drives their behavior. It becomes a lifeline. If they don't have that next fix, it drives their every decision. Well, with youth in particular, people don't know this, but at 14 years of age, they have to consent to certain medical evaluations and treatments. I can't force a drug-addicted 14-year-old into rehab. Society would love to know that we could, but I can't, unfortunately. And so we have to partner with services that are geared towards getting them clean off of these addictions, that are geared towards building up resources around them so that they're at a space to, one, deal with the trauma that has occurred in their life, and two, then be willing to work with, say, a law enforcement agency in putting together a case. And so it is this wraparound view that has to come into place. It's not just a law enforcement issue. We have to partner with our service providers. Once we have that, I'd suggest that finding traffickers as law enforcement is not all that difficult. It's very prevalent. It's gaining enough information to produce to the courts and to a prosecuting agency to say, here's what we can move forward with. But again, it's incumbent upon building that trust with the victim. And that's become our focus, is identifying how we can build trust, approaching these victims very differently, trauma informed. I mean, just having a youth get up on the stand to testify about this trauma is traumatic. That is victimizing in a way, in that they're going to have to relive this in front of people. So how do we build relationships within the community so that we can support them through this incredibly difficult process to then hold these individuals accountable to the law for their actions? And it's usually a very long process that takes years to do that. And it requires very intense hands-on. I've called Shelley on numerous occasions with the youth saying, hey, here's the thing we need right now. This is the straw that's going to break this camel's back, and I'm not in the place to do it. I need some help. Maybe it's clothing. Maybe it's food. Maybe it's just a safe place for the night, whatever it is. And on many a late night, Shelley has jumped for that cause, and not just Shelley, others as well that we've built relationships with that are putting foot to the road for actually taking action to help these kids.
Yeah, boots on the ground and people that are long-suffering. That's what I love about the Christian community, because they're there to serve. You know, it's one thing to share the love of Christ, which some will criticize, but what you're really doing is showing the love of Christ. You're expecting nothing in return. You're not expecting any standards or any judgments to be applied to any of these people. You're just helping them.
And I do have to say, Jim, that law enforcement is a challenge for a victim to work with at any level. And so what we like at New Mexico Dream Center is the approach that the Ghost Unit takes, because it is very different than what we've seen with other law enforcement agencies. And so I would say some of the success that we have had, or are, knock on wood, hoping to see, comes because these young people really do end up building these very trusting relationships with the members of the Ghost Unit. And so I know, like Kyle said, oh, you know, we're the boots on the ground. These guys, this man has driven all night long to pick up a kid who has called him up. And I'm like, oh, I just managed to get myself to another state, and I don't know what to do. And those kinds of things happen. And they, Kyle, the Ghost Unit will go, they get them, they bring them back, and we start all over again. So when we talk about this as this slow process, this is a slow, slow process.
Sergeant Woods, I want to ask you about the business aspects of this for the bad guys, because this is a business. If they weren't making money, this wouldn't be happening, right?
That's correct. It's extremely lucrative for them.
Is this a nationwide problem? And are there federal resources that your department can tap into to help you fight this?
It absolutely is a nationwide problem. We have a culture absolutely obsessed with sexualizing youth. And, I mean, the pornography culture is just invasive and a poison. And there are federal resources that are available to us. In fact, the Ghost Unit is part of a federal task force as well as a state task force. In fact, all of the members of the Ghost Unit are federal task force officers, and we work very close with those partners in those law enforcement communities. to make sure that when we get traction behind a case and a victim, that we can get the services that they need and we can move forward with prosecution, we stand the best chance at truly finding justice for them. And most often that is going to look like, especially in the case of domestic minor sex trafficking, a prosecution at the federal level. And so we work to build relationships with the United States Attorney's Office. But again, we have a very broad network of relationships. The New Mexico Attorney General's Office leads the state task force for human trafficking. We are part of that and work cooperatively with them on a regular basis, as well as many others.
I'm thinking about how overwhelming the problem is once a child or any human being is trafficked. But preventing it, and we're going back to Shelley's going to be a guest speaker at the Vulnerable No More event. That is on June 18th from 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. at Legacy Church, their central campus. Toya Kaplan was a guest on our show last week, and she has the For the One ministry, primarily focused now on prevention and making information available. Would both of you advise, what I didn't know that Sergeant Wood said a minute ago was that the majority of people that are trafficked may have been involved in abusive situations at home. That's even more heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So Sergeant Woods, if you're noticing this kind of thing in your next door neighbors or in children that you're observing way before there's any sex trafficking, what do you do?
Well, obviously, in any emergency situation, I'm going to say you need to call 911. But maybe for the listener, that looks like just being aware of a home in their neighborhood where there's some young children, where they've recognized the signs. There's some marital discontent. Maybe the yelling is often, and being a safe place for that child to play. You know, as Christians, we are called to be vulnerable and to open up and be a service to those around us. And so maybe that looks like just being a safe place for that child to play, even if it's just in the front yard with your child, for a break from that environment. Maybe it's inviting over a family for dinner. Maybe it's just helping them out. Maybe it is, as a teacher, you see the signs of a child that's malnourished, and one, abiding by the law to report as you're required to, but then following up and making sure the services are provided to that child, checking in on them. Spoken to many a teacher who has brought in their own supplies to help for a child. Feed New Mexico Kids. Get involved with Feed New Mexico Kids. Just make sure our kids are getting fed when they're not in school, and so that the parents are maybe not as stressed and therefore triggering more violent encounters at home. That's why it's this broad, broad issue that can be addressed from a number of angles. I'm not going to suggest someone just walk up to a child that's likely been trafficked on the side of the street and try engaging them in that conversation. That might not go too well.
But that might be a 911 call, and you
right.
might be able to give the address and description as readily available as cameras are on our phones.
Mm-hmm.
Take a quick picture, shoot that over to somebody, because then that gives you some resources. Last time Shelley was on, I kind of put together an analogy where I'm literally seeing a 12-year-old child is on the street for whatever reason. And there's a race between New Mexico Dream Center and people that care and love them and want to take them off the street and a trafficker. And I just hate the fact that we lose any of those races. Shelley, share with us a story about somebody that you might know that has gone and been helped by your ministry and is doing well now.
So we've got what we call some co-clients.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you call them clients. I call them clients. And in fact, there's a girl that we've been working with since she was 14 when I first met her. And I met her because Kyle had called and said, hey, she needs a good place to go. She needs some place to go. And so we had literally just opened the harbor, and the goal was to get her there so she could get some clothes and, you know, some stuff to eat. We knew she was going to be a runaway risk. And I think after that first meeting, she ran away within 2 or 3 days, I think was what it was. And, but what she would do is she would stay in contact. So she would give Kyle a call, or she'd give me a call. And so through that process, when she was 16, you know, we would have sporadic interactions with her. When she was 16, she was willing to engage in services again. Now, this kiddo had been in and out of state custody with CYFD, I think, since she was 7, 8, or 9. I mean, she was pretty young.
She's pretty young.
And so she was not a fan of CYFD, but she was getting older, and she was kind of like, I know I've got to get these things figured out. She had been trafficked by a couple of different people during this time. And so she had gone to one of the group homes here in Albuquerque and was in that group home, was able to do some sober living with Serenity Mesa. And then, she actually ended up coming out of that group home. My husband and I took her in as what's called fictive kin for foster care because there was no next step. So this kind of goes back to the highlighting of these really high needs kids and not having next steps for her. She could only be at the group home she was at for a certain amount of time. And she was, you know, she was causing a little bit of trouble. And so she ended up coming and staying with us. And so we jumped through all the hoops with CYFD to become foster parents in like 30 days. It was a lot of hoops. And, so she stayed with us. We took her on vacation. So for the very first time, she was able to get to, we took her to Disney World, you know, like all these kinds of things, wanting to try to give her some, not only just experiences that she hasn't had, but, feeling like she's got a place to go back to because we knew she would run away. And she did. And so she ran away, again, and instead of being, and it was a horrible runaway experience because she was found by some people that had previously trafficked her and, you know, bad things happened, but she called in and she came back in for services right away instead of being gone for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, a year. She came back in. And so we were able to try to engage with services with her again. And so, she's 18 now. And in fact, she's still in our life. So Dan, in fact, is, helping her move to a new place tomorrow. So he's gonna, you know, pack up the truck and get her bed and her stuff and all of that. And so when Kyle talks about being as a community involved as a community, that's kind of what it looks like. Is it's like going, here's the deal. We have grandkids at this point, but she's one of our kids now. And so we will always answer her call and do what we can to help her. She's got a hard road ahead of her. You know, she's got lots of things she's going to have to figure out. She's going to have to decide she wants to, you know, work and decide school. You know, she's got all sorts of things that she's going to have to figure out. But having a foundation, a place where she knows she can go, is a huge step in that. So that's one of the stories of like a co-kid we have here.
And we've got some more stories coming up. Shelley Rep, Executive Director of the New Mexico Dream Center in studio, along with Sergeant Kyle Woods with the Sheriff's Department, Merlino County Sheriff's Department. I wish we didn't have to talk about this, but I am encouraged that we are and that there's some answers and there's some people that can get help and there's services, and I'm hoping that it stimulates our listeners to maybe volunteer. We'll talk about that in the next hour, our next half an hour, and we'll also talk a little bit about how they can support the ministry financially, be available to assist the law enforcement. I mean, there's just so much to this. So thank you for listening today. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect.
Who comes to mind when you think of great, godly women? Probably Jesus' mother Mary. Maybe Ruth, the unlikely ancestor of Christ. But what about you? Here's New York Times bestselling author Eric Metaxas.
Clearly, if God created us male and female in His image, it's leaning into who we are as women, if we're women, that is going to show God's greatness.
Discover how the lives of some of the greatest women in history can show you the path to true greatness in your own life as a woman made in God's image. That's what you'll find in this month's inspiring resource by Eric Metaxas.
In every one of the seven women, I think you see a different side of femininity.
Seven Women is our thank you for your gift of $35 or more today to help connect more people to God's Word. And right now, we'll also send you a special bonus resource, Pastor Skip's six-message CD collection on prominent women from Scripture. Visit connectwithskip.com/offer to give online securely or call 800-922-1888.
thousands of gas stations, all out of gas. And the few that were open had lines and lines of cars all waiting to fill up. That was the scene across much of the Southeast recently, after a cyber attack upon a fuel supply line. It was a reminder that situations can change quickly, and things we take for granted can suddenly be gone, whether we're talking money, health, or gasoline. But that's not the case with God. Billy Graham taught that when you have a relationship with God's Son, Jesus Christ, you have complete access to Him 24/7, no matter what's going on around you.
The Scripture says, pray without ceasing. Jesus Christ died to make communication with God possible. No problem is too difficult. No burden too heavy for His love.
God's waiting to hear from you right now. Learn more at findpeacewithgod.net. That's findpeacewithgod.net, and it is from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, when we're in a dark season of personal pain, it is easy to begin questioning God's goodness. Man, I know that. That may be a natural response to our discomfort, but it certainly isn't the right one. Instead, in Psalm 107, we read that those who are hurting should purposefully quote, here it is, give thanks to the Lord for He is good. God's goodness, the psalmist reminds us, can be seen in the ways He's delivered us from previous bouts with trouble and pain. And of course, the greatest example of His goodness is our eternal redemption from sin in Christ. You may be in a dark season, but remember, God is good. Whether your suffering is a result of some unfortunate circumstance or some poor decision of yours, know that God is gracious and He can deliver.
Right thinking leads to right living. Want more? Power up with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point, a half hour of hard-hitting Bible teaching here on your station. Or check it out online at focalpointradio.org.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Dave and their team at Dave Slayton Associates Realtors are sponsors of the programming here on KLYT and ABQ Connect. Dave and Holly Slade at Dave Slayton Associates, 342-8100. That's 342-8100 or on the web at abqhomeseeker.com. Shelly Rep, the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is in studio, along with her co-labor in arms, Sergeant Kyle Woods with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department. The Ghost Unit, that's kind of a cool name.
Yeah. It's not an acronym. That was intentional.
but the thing that I'm impressed with is Shelly's already described your heart of not only yourself, but the department. I mean, a lot of times some of us might categorize law enforcement as being mean and that kind of thing, but that's not really true. You're really being help. You're being a help. You're doing community policing, and you're even developing relationships with some of these people before there's arrests made and those kind of things, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And no, law enforcement is not thought of kindly. The rhetoric amongst the community is not generally kind. But the men and women that I get to work with in the law enforcement community that I know got into this to help, to help our community. And we get to do that at such a unique level within the Ghost Unit. And so maybe that doesn't look like we get a prosecution of a trafficker, but maybe that looks like we get to build some trust with a youth that otherwise was headed down a bad path, and we get to plug them into a service like Shelley's. Maybe it's an adult who's hurting, and we get to plug them into LifeLink in Santa Fe. That is a success if they find a support system where otherwise they were vulnerable, and we'll keep fighting that fight. It's well
worth
it.
No, that's a huge, huge success. I want to ask you something that, again, is a perception thing. Is trafficking limited to one area of our city, Albuquerque, or Las Cruces? I mean, are there certain, or is it just happening everywhere?
Trafficking occurs in all corners, unfortunately. Geography absolutely impacts it and plays a role. And so if you are in a more, like a border town closer to the border, say that of Las Cruces, there's going to be more issues potentially with smuggling of persons or with undocumented youth that are coming in being trafficked because they're so vulnerable, not having even the services that sometimes we talk about can be difficult for our youth. But so it plays a role, but it happens everywhere. And it happens because we do have a depraved society that sexualizes youth, that turns a blind eye to it so often, and it's so accessible for our youth now, and they've become vulnerable in such a unique way online. The Ghost Unit also investigates child exploitation online, and the two go hand in hand. And so the corners that this occurs in, unfortunately, is universal. It happens all over. If you have a truck stop somewhere, that's a prime location where a very unique form of trafficking often happens at the truck stops with those who are passing through. And to give credit, there are truckers who have formed a coalition to try to stand against this. And that's amazing, right? Where there's dark, there's an opportunity for light to be there as well. And we see that.
I have in my mind prosecuting a trafficker or saving a victim. What about the customers? Can you throw those people in jail?
Good question, Jim. Good question, because we do have to understand, as Kyle stated before, that this is an economic crime. There is supply and there is demand. And so that's important for us to address, because if there was not demand, there would be no supply or diminished supply. And so we definitely have an issue with people who are the purchasers, because you've got the trafficker who's providing the supply, you've got the people purchasing the supply, and then the vulnerable victims that are the supply. So it's tricky, because as much as we talk about, yeah, we want to get those traffickers, because we do. We don't want them to remain on the streets. If we don't address demand, then it's not going to matter, because another trafficker is just going to jump right up in their place.
I'm almost trying to use inflammatory language here. So
100% you are.
Well, it's because I want people to understand, you know, there would be no sex trafficking if there wasn't a demand. So guys, men, come on. Let's, you know, our society is so sexualized. There's so much, there's prevalence of pornography, and, you know, you can read and go through everything you want to go through about how that develops in a person's life. But one of the things I'm convinced of in reading the way I've read is that the law of diminishing return takes over, just like it does with a drug addict.
Yeah.
And so it just multiplies on itself, and it takes over your brain, literally physiologically, not just emotionally. There's things, you know, synapses that are being rewired through the use of, you know, sex addiction and these kind of things. So it's really scary. But Sergeant, I guess I can't, the inflammatory language that Steve is on the same page with me, Steve Ryman, our engineer, is that this is really slave trade.
In many ways, it is. I mean, it is exploiting another human being's vulnerabilities for your profit, for someone else's profit. And there are a number of people along the way that in some way, shape, or form literally gain from that, or perceive a gain from that. And so we try to address it at all angles. We will do undercover operations where we will pose as underage youth on online platforms. And it's sad, but we've run operations where we've had to shut down because we've had so many people come in, and we literally have a backlog, a train, so to speak, of people that we've arrested who wanted to come in and purchase a juvenile for sex. And we're kind of filled up with how many people we can process for that night. So we have to call an end to the operation. And, you know, in that instance, there's no quote unquote trafficker involved, but that is a youth that is perceived to be vulnerable and available to someone for their needs, and they engage in it. And it's a very sad commentary on where these people are.
Well, that's a great segue after we take a break and say thank you to some sponsors. I want to go right into what is recruiting look like. And so I think that's a great thing to talk about next. I hope you're enjoying the program as you listen today, because it's educational. I know it's not pleasureful to talk about domestic minor sex trafficking or human trafficking at all, but it is helpful to understand what is going on. You need to be aware how you can protect your children, your grandchildren. You need to think about other people's children. You need to think about their sons and daughters, because it's not always girls.
Nope.
It's just a pervasive problem that I'm really glad you two are here in studio talking with us about it. We'll be back on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
A Harvest America moment with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Everybody has and lives by a form of faith. And when we bring the word faith up, I think the problem is we make it too mystical. When in fact, we act in faith every day. For instance, when you go to a restaurant and you order, you're hoping that it will be prepared properly. When you board a 747 that weighs over 300,000 pounds, that it's going to somehow get up in the air and take you to the place you want to go to. But then someone comes along and says, have faith in God. And we say, whoa, faith in God, that's insane. Listen to this. There is no safer place to put your faith than in God Himself.
Impact your world with the gospel by knowing God and making Him known. Connect with Pastor Greg Laurie and sign up to receive his free daily devotion emails. To get started, visit harvest.org today.
This is a Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
It's great to know an origin story. It's great to know a backstory, but it's even better to know what's in front of you. And the Bible says that, yes, the rivers point to us and tell us what has been lost, but they also tell us what has been gained. For the Bible says we will end our final day when heaven and earth are once again fused together, when once again God's dwelling place, His presence is with us, and we can, like Adam and Eve, walk with God in the garden city called heaven in the cool of the day. There will be a river flowing. There will be a river nourishing. There will be a river that energizes a tree that causes there to be fruits and leaves that can heal. Our capital city, like so many capital cities around the world, is built on a river.
For more Fresh Thoughts, go to LeviLusco.com.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
While many of us see signs of a return to normalcy, others around the globe continue to battle the pandemic. In Asia, a second COVID-19 wave is ravaging communities there in what is called the tsunami of suffering. Gospel for Asia is doing what they can to ease the suffering, but support for their effort is desperately needed. Pray about your involvement and log into gfa.org/coronavirus for regular updates and an opportunity to make a financial donation. That's gfa.org/coronavirus or call GFA World at 800-946-2742. There's just things happening all over the world. In our good old state of New Mexico, we're talking about human trafficking, minor domestic sex trafficking. It's a topic that I wish we didn't have to talk about, but we are, and we're going to fight it. And you both have made a concerted effort over how many years now have you been working together on this problem?
I think 4 years ago.
I was going to say maybe 5 years.
Yeah,
we started building that relationship. Yeah.
We actually met at like a Calvary event. Do you remember that, Kyle? Like there was like, it was like a Q&A thing with,
yeah,
at the Calvary when they were
in Knob Hill.
In Knob Hill.
The Lobo Theater.
Yeah. Like I'd heard about you and I'm like, hey, I've heard all sorts of good things about you.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to ask both of you this question. I'll ask Kyle to go first. Tell us a little bit. Describe how recruiting is done.
Recruiting comes in a variety of ways specific to the type of trafficking that takes place. Commonly what we'll see with runaway and at-risk youth that are on the street, recruiting looks like at first someone comes up and offers something that they know that kid's going to need. And maybe that looks like, some marijuana. There's a case that we worked where the young lady was just, someone just pulled up, saw her out on the street corner, offered her some marijuana. At first she said, heck no, get out of here. I don't want anything to do with you, but a little persistence one day and now we're kind of in pocket, as it were, with this person who's providing a resource. Hey, can I get you a meal? Hey, I can put you up for a night. You don't have a place to stay. And they're kind of hooked, kind of the insect in the web at that point. It can very quickly turn violent. We'll call it guerrilla pimping. I don't even like to use that term because that was glorified in our society. But they become very violent at that time and then kind of force them into the situation. Another avenue would be through like a romance where someone will feign to be a boyfriend of a youth, maybe an older male, could be a same age male who's engaged in it, but oftentimes an older male who has some means will come along and will build this romantic relationship with this child who, again, has this layered trauma, is looking for family, is looking for connection, who wants someone to care for them, who needs someone to provide for them, and they start checking those boxes. And then pretty quick, they'll start saying, well, hey, maybe we can do this. I'm going to introduce you to somebody. And hey, look, I've taken good care of you, haven't I? And it's this very exploitive, manipulative behavior. And most people would say, how could that happen? Why don't they just run from that? Again, if you don't see this from the optic of a lifetime of trauma and layered trauma and understand what that can do to the human mind, and to the body and to a child who's not fully developed, you're not going to get it, and you might kind of start going towards the victim blaming. But we see this very commonly as far as the recruiting's concerned. There's other forms that happen within strip clubs for adult women. They get recruited out of dance clubs into circuits, into being trafficked. There's a number of other avenues. I don't know if I'm missing any of the big ones here, Shelley.
I'd say those are the big ones. The only other ones that we've seen along with that, so with gang trafficking, because we do have a lot of gangs in Albuquerque and across the United States. So it's kind of common to be like jumped into a gang, like you have to do something or be beat up, or, you know, there's some sort of thing you have
there's
to go
initiation
through.
Initiation.
There we go. I knew there was a word. And so quite often that will look like a rape for a girl that's coming into a gang. And then that can turn into a form of profit for that gang where that girl is trafficked. So I would say those are probably, in listening to what you're saying, Kyle, those are probably the big ones. The thing that I think, people need to realize, when Kyle had talked about how trafficking doesn't look like snatching the kid from, you know, the cart at the store, you know, that type of thing. But traffickers are sneaky and they are looking for those vulnerable kids. So I think it's super important that families are very aware of social media, because before, and it still does happen like this, you know, it's an interpersonal relationship a lot of times. And so it's like you have to actually see the person. Well, now with things being so virtual, that's really what you see a lot of, are these like virtual relationships, but which aren't real relationships. We had a call from the Torrance County manager about the truck stop in Moriarty. And there was a girl who had, she was in California, and she had, you know, kind of made a boyfriend, and he came to her home, because she was running away, and she left with him, and he was a trafficker. And so he trafficked her through Mexico and then was coming back through New Mexico, and they stopped in Moriarty for gas, and she asked somebody in the women's bathroom if she could borrow their phone. And that's how she called out for help. So, you know, the thing is that, relationships are important. And families are important. And that's why this is such a horrific crime. And this is why it's so hard to wrap our minds around, because it's not this just simple, hey, just grab a kid and this is what happens. It is, as Kyle said, layers of trauma. You've got a child that's had all sorts of terrible things happen to them already. And this is one more vulnerability that, that somebody's able to exploit. Pay attention to social media for your kids. Pay attention to your family. I think that one of the things that, and again, some families will do this, some won't, is take the rose-colored glasses off of your eyes and look at your family. Do you have things in your family that could potentially cause vulnerability for your children? Maybe you were a survivor of sex abuse from an uncle or a grandpa, but you don't protect your kid from that. They're allowed to be around them, things like that. Protect your children. Take off those rose-colored glasses. Look at your family. Look at what's going on around you, because it will keep your kid safer.
And that's one of the major points that Sergeant Woods made early on, is that families, people that are involved in sex trafficking, are largely abused in their own family. But here's something absolutely heinous that Shelley told us, Sergeant. She told us a couple shows ago that there are actually families that traffic their own children to make money.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that we are speaking in generalities, and that can tend to leave out acknowledgement of other forms that are common. And familial trafficking does take place. It's, you know, I think it, as hard as this topic is, it strikes a particularly difficult chord when you consider what a family should be for a child. But we had a young lady who whose parents are, you know, single mom in this case, was paid in meth for essentially the receipt of the daughter. And again, there's this addiction there. There's this very dark place that drives a person away from logic, away from what would otherwise be a loving and caring, protective behavior towards their child into, well, it fixes my needs for now. I have my fix for the next week of this narcotic that I'm severely addicted to. And my child, who is so difficult to deal with, is terrible at home, behavior problems. Well, yeah, there is a lot of trauma. They are very difficult to deal with. That manifests itself in difficult behaviors. Is now out of my home, you know, and then they're into this situation, or maybe it's a father who's addicted to pornography and has gone down a road of engaging in that of children. And we've seen that where they will, get into very dark places of the internet, where there is a venue for this type of behavior. And they will single out these children. We'll see that they're not in school, they're not in daycare, they're not plugged into any type of community. And that's what the predatory behavior does, is it singles peoples out, it identifies vulnerabilities, and then it attacks. And that can happen from within a family as well, unfortunately.
But there is hope. And Shelley, I want you to tell us, give us a little couple of the data points. We only got about 2 minutes left, and then tell us how people can support what you're doing, both as volunteers and helping you financially.
Absolutely. So I think that when you're talking about data points, that's always a challenge because, you know, this is a crime, and so it's hidden. Some of the things that we've seen in New Mexico for 2020 with COVID, in working with the ICAC team, which is Internet Crimes Against Children, that they had, I believe, 300-something tips or calls in about child enticement cases, that type of thing. And then in 2020, the report came out, and this is the ICAC through the Attorney General's office, that it was 2,200 enticement tips. This is a big increase.
It's skyrocketed with COVID. With kids being online.
With COVID, yes, and with kids being online. And so, you know, when you're looking at those types of things, that's important. The other kind of thing when you're talking about, like, data points is it's important to understand in the state of New Mexico that there are different places where there are going to be higher instances of trafficking, as Sergeant Woods had talked about. So the border is a big one. Looking honestly, our shared border with Texas, where the oil pan is, we see a lot of trafficking happening there. We see it in the Four Corners area with the Navajo Nation. That's another kind of like heat spot on a heat map. And then the whole central area with Albuquerque, Santa Fe, that area as well. So those are some of the kind of common areas that we see. We've had trafficking reported in Portales, New Mexico, which has a population of like 15,000 people. I mean, it's a small, small community. And so it's important to understand that it can happen everywhere. Contact me at nmdreamcenter.org or 505-900-3833. We are primarily volunteer run, so we love volunteers to help us. We've got a pretty rigorous training aspect that goes with it, but it's a way to get involved and make a difference.
Well, I have to say that I appreciate law enforcement very much. Sergeant Woods, I really appreciate you and your family, and I hope you're doing what it takes to stay, keep your mental health, your spiritual health, and maybe next time we get together, we can talk a little bit about that, because you're out there on the front lines. Shelley, you're on the front lines too, so God bless your work, and we'll continue to pray for you. And listeners, if you can help financially, all of these services are provided to clients free of charge, but as we all know, it's not free. Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.